Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 7876 show.
Let me see if we can figure that out for a second. 76. Where have I seen those numbers before?
On a scoreboard somewhere,
right? It sounds familiar here in Kentucky.
That's right. This is, in fact, the University of Kentucky number one Wichita State score, 78-76.
You know,
we are still celebrating, although it's obviously past time.
I have to correct you because people have been doing this all week since that win, and I have to correct you. They were not number one. They were a number one seed in the tournament, and there are four of those. They were, at best, number two in the nation.
Boy, you really take the fun out of making these shows up.
No. I take the inaccuracies out.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio,
you
and here to
me.
Deflate your balloon, as he has. From the University of Kentucky, the techno communications guru, Rick Phillips, to talk about our online presence. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony, you know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. That's right. The Moorhead State Public Radio Station has a wonderful website, WMKY.org. Jump on over on that site, find Health Matters, listen to some of the other shows. But once you find your way to the section on Health Matters, you will, in fact, find the audio. You'll find show summaries. You'll be able to sign up for the podcast. If you don't know what podcasting is, do a quick Google or Wikipedia on podcasting. It is a way to have Health Matters, or any program for that matter that does podcasting, delivered directly to your media player automagically. And in our case, that comes out about 4 days after when the show airs the first time. So usually it's around Tuesday of the following week. Certainly jump on over to WMKY.org and listen to the audio. After that, go to facebook.com/HM Radio Show or do a search for Health Matters Radio Show. You will find a fan page there, or just a place where we every once in a while hang out, drop some news, drop some research. Some of it's on the show, some of it's timely, some of it's...
not timely at all.
Just interesting.
Yeah, I found stuff that's a couple of years old, but still, when it's fun, it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think last week ago or 2 weeks ago, I found something on how we kind of have been talking about IBM Big Blue and how they're going to use Big Blue in the Human Genome Project and basically looking at it for evaluating medical records and that sort of thing. Anyway, there was a cool article on that. But anyway, facebook.com/HM Radio Show. Interact with us. Give us some show topics. Make some comments. Tell us what you think of Tony. You know, that's what that website is all about.
Our sponsor for today's show, the 13th annual Ooh Baby It's a Baby Shower. This is sponsored by the Northeast AHEC, the University of Kentucky Healthcare Obstetrics and Gynecology Service in Moorhead, and St. Clair Regional Medical Center. It is April 5th, 1 week from this weekend, at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the Moorhead Conference Center.
And oh baby, will it be a doozy.
It is for people who are planning to have babies, to newer adopting parents, a community baby shower. They have informational booths on breastfeeding, dental care, infant care, immunizations, financial information, safety issues, and also a special booth for new fathers. That's right, dads, don't give up on this baby shower. It is for you as well. April 5th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., free to the public, Moorhead Conference Center. Oh, baby, it's a baby shower. Lots of prizes, door prizes, free giveaways, the sort of thing that you need to go. You need to sign up for these things because you can get some really nifty merchandise for your baby.
Now, what I find amazing is here on Health Matters, maybe not in the Dr. Tony Weaver era, but in Health Matters, if you go back in the annals of history, you will find that Health Matters has broadcast all 13 announcements for Oh Baby, It's a
Baby Shower. It's one of the biggest things they do. They'll have probably 500 people there.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, I remember when we first sat down, and I believe this was the brainstorm of Kayla Rose. I believe she was the first AHEC Center director that brought that on. It could have been Russ, but I think it was Kayla. And it was a pretty cool idea. We started off very small, but boy, did it catch fire.
Yep.
And now here we are, 500 people.
April 5th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Get there early. Sign up for the free merchandise. Find out about what it is to be a new parent. And in honor of our sponsor, our first two articles actually about children.
Really?
Yes. The first one, which really surprised me.
Do you know about children anymore?
I have a grandchild. You know that.
Well,
I know. An 8-month-old grandchild that I know nothing about.
But that's a slug at this point.
Oh, you call my grandchild
a slug.
Well,
I mean, in theory.
That is fighting words. At this point, we are dividing the studio up. I'm going to go on with the show, and security is going to take
care of it. So let me ask you this. mobile yet? Crawling?
She is. She crawls. She rolls off couches, injures herself. She kind of gallops along the floor on her belly.
Okay. Because then I would suggest that that is what I've always determined to be out of the slug stage.
Right. No, she sits up on her own. She investigates the environment. She is now interacting at 8 months.
Have you made
her
cry?
No. She has been displeased with the way I held her.
Ah.
She starts crying and looks for her mother, and I am obviously not her mother.
I learned long ago to take babies. Now, this is your granddaughter, so it's kind of different, but I've learned to take babies who don't know me and hold them to where they can't see me, and it really makes it much more pleasant for them.
That's why we're on the radio, my friend. That's why we're on the radio. The first article comes from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health and also the University of California, Berkeley. And this, I will say, this changed my mind somewhat. I'll just read it. This is, the title is Association Between Casino Opening or Expansion and Risk of Childhood Obesity.
Really?
Yes. Now, think about this.
Are you
going
to explain to me why I'm obese?
Well, because you didn't have enough casinos in your childhood. The economic resources, this is their introduction. We know that higher socioeconomic levels have lower risk of childhood obesity. So when a casino opens or expands, we have focused so much on the money that goes out, the people that gamble, the people that shouldn't be gambling, the way the money leaves people who may not have enough money to be spending that money on gambling. What we don't focus on is, what about the community where that money comes in? And this is exactly what they did. They looked at anthropomorphic measurements of fitness and obesity from Native American children ages 7 to 18 years in 117 school districts in tribal lands in California. Had 10 years worth of data. The school districts, obviously some of them either built casinos or expanded, and some didn't. And so they looked at the difference between the two. They measured their per capita annual income, their median household income, percentage of population in poverty, child overweight and obesity scores. And out of these 117 school districts, 57 either built a casino or expanded an existing casino. Some didn't expand. The number of slot machines per capita, which I've never seen this term, but number of slot machines per capita in these school districts was 7. 7 slot machines per capita in these districts.
Nice.
That's a lot of slot
machines. What is
yours? We have 0 slot machines per capita.
Right. At least we hope.
Yeah. Now, if you open a new casino, they changed 13 slot machines per capita. 48% of those kids were classified as overweight or obese. Now, every casino slot machine per capita gained was associated with an increase in annual income, $500 for each family, and a decrease in poverty of 0.6%, and obesity dropped by about 0.2 percentage points for every slot machine per capita.
So, Tony, are you ready to talk about this?
I am.
Is this a chicken and egg thing? Is this the dilemma that we find with these studies where the casinos located in the more affluent communities, thus changing the numbers?
I don't think so, Rick. This is the interesting thing, because what they did was they compared the ones that expanded with the ones that didn't. So you could have a casino, but you didn't expand. Every time you put in extra slot machines, childhood obesity went down, family income went up. Now, those families could have used that income to buy more junk food, but at some point, they get enough extra income that they actually start picking better food, apparently. That's the theory here, that you can increase their affluence. In a sense, it's like a whole community winning the lottery. Money comes flowing in, and apparently obesity rates, and obviously poverty rates, go down. So, you know, I had never thought about expanding casino gambling. I always thought about what it did to the people who gambled, the money going out. Never really looked at the money coming in.
In other words, the tax base and the revenues and the...
Now, it may be that these Native American-run casinos may be different. They are, by their charters, they are required to put the money back into the community.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's some federal tax exemptions that, being that they're somewhat of a sovereign nation on federal land, they probably aren't subject to certain taxes, and thus they keep it in the community.
Right. But they are required to do that. So that may be different from a casino set up in Indiana or something that we did in Kentucky. But the idea
Vegas
of being
would
able
be the better
to.
One.
Yeah. Or Las Vegas. I don't think that they necessarily, their obesity rates drop every time a new casino opens in Las Vegas. That's a good point. But it can be structured so that casinos can actually benefit the children in a community. So I'm telling Governor Beshear, fight on for your casinos for the good of the children. Let's not have fat kids. Let's have casino gambling.
Boy, that just sounds bad to say, doesn't it? I mean, but Tony, now that's interesting to say, though, but why wouldn't states that are heavily invested in their lottery be subject to the same kind of principles, because Kentucky is extremely invested in lottery, and that's a very legalized form of gambling that doesn't seem to affect those
right.
numbers.
I think the key is that per capita income went up $500 per family for every slot machine per capita. And again, slot machine per capita.
So you have to actually live in that community where the casino opens,
right? And that money is distributed, whereas the lottery, you know, goes to offset taxes right. or to do scholarships or whatever. Even on a
it's
good
distributed
day.
Across the entire region,
right?
Yeah.
And it does not increase the family income in a measurable way. That's my theory, anyway. You apparently have to do this on a pretty big level. I think with the casinos, obviously, the people who are doing the gambling are not the same as the people who live there. At least there are a different population. So money comes in. Whereas a lottery, we may redistribute money among ourselves,
right.
but there are not a lot of people coming in from other states to play our lottery.
Right. I guess that's true.
Yeah. But at any rate, I did not expect that. That is from the American Medical Association Journal, the March 5th issue from Johns Hopkins and from Cal Berkeley, indicating that casino gambling may actually benefit the children. I'm going to tantalize with this one. I don't think we got time to finish it, but I just want to set the stage for our next fractional portion. And again, in honor of the baby shower, this is a childhood article. This came from March 17th in Pediatrics from Mexico City. This was a trial in 4 daycare centers, and they gave the kids Lactobacillus reuteri. They didn't use yogurt. You know, Lactobacillus, is, there are many of these that are in yogurt, but this was actually a pure colony of this bacteria. They gave this to half the 336 kids. 168 of them got this Lactobacillus reuteri. The other half got what they call placebo. They did not get the germ. And they followed them to see what effects it would have if you gave these kids, ages 6 to 36 months, if you gave them probiotics and sent them off to their daycare center. The effect on diarrhea, the effect on respiratory illnesses. I'm going to leave it at that. So here we set the stage. 336 kids, ages 6 to 36 months, in Mexico City, they were in 4 daycare centers. Half of them got Lactobacillus. Half of them got something that just was inert. And they wanted to see if giving these small children Lactobacillus would have an effect on infections. We're not going to tell you right now because we're getting more sophisticated. We're trying to keep you hanging on. Take a break. Get some Lactobacillus. You might want to try some yogurt. You may want to go to the health food store and grab some. And we will tell you how this turned out in our next fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is a second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 7876 show. Our salute to those University of Kentucky Wildcat basketball players who, at the time we're recording the show, they are still in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, by the time this show airs, that situation may change, but we doubt it. We think that they have a good chance of remaining in the tournament. 7876 is the name of the show. Our sponsor for the second time, the 13th annual It's a baby shower.
Why didn't you name it This One Clanked Off the Rim to the Right Show? Or The Winning Shot Doesn't Go In.
Health Matters Clanks Off the Rim to the Right. Salute to the UK basketball team. Would have to just include the final score.
Never mind. I'm not telling you now.
Okay.
You
fine.
Do your old baby thing.
Oh, baby, it's a baby shower. April 5th, 1 week from this weekend, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., Morehead Conference Center. The Northeast AHEC, UK Healthcare Obstetrics and Gynecology Service in Morehead, St. Clair Regional Medical Center sponsoring a free-to-the-public baby shower, community baby shower. If you are pregnant, if you are planning to become pregnant, if you are a new parent, if you are an adopting parent, all those will qualify. If you just want to find out what babies are all about, please drop by the Morehead Conference Center April 5th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Booths on breastfeeding, dental care, infant care, immunizations, financial information, safety issues, free drawings, prize giveaways, a special booth for new fathers. It's really hard to have a child and raise a child properly and miss this event. There is so much information here. You're going to start off behind. Is that what you want for your new child, starting off behind and not aware of how to raise a baby? I am embarrassed for you. April 5th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., this is where you need to be if you are contemplating raising an infant child.
Yeah, I mean, basically they say if an infant child is in your future or in your current, then you need to be here. And, I mean, last I heard, they had classes. They dealt with information for grandparents.
Oh, that's a good point.
They had information for parents, for future parents, for stuff that's related just to the moms, just to the dads. Freebies. They actually have vendors show up and actually can help recommend certain types of devices like car seats. And I mean, what is amazing is that there is a lot to know in today's environment about how to keep a baby safe.
Yes, a lot has changed since you were a child, thank goodness. We no longer stand up in the front seat and slam our heads into the metal dashboard. We no longer play with toys made out of tin with razor-sharp edges. Electrical outlets are actually covered, so we don't shock ourselves. So many things so much better than we had. No wonder we turned out so badly. That's our sponsor, the 13th annual Oh Baby, It's a Baby Shower, April 5th, 10 a.m., 1 p.m. at the Moorhead Conference Center. Now, in honor of that, again, we've been doing some more pediatric articles than we usually have. We talked about casino gambling and obesity, and I left you on tenterhooks last time because we were talking about how to manage diarrhea and respiratory infections in daycare centers. Four daycare centers, Mexico City, April 2011 to June 2012, 336 healthy children ages 6 to 36 months. Half of them got Lactobacillus reuteri. Parents gave them through a dropper during their feeding first thing in the morning. The other half didn't, and they watched to see what would happen. 99 episodes of diarrhea in the reuteri group compared with 152 in the placebo group. It reduced the number of days with diarrhea per child down by two-thirds during the trial and by half during a 12-week follow-up period. Number of days with respiratory infections cut in two-thirds down during the trial and half during the 12-week follow-up period. It reduced the number of days of school absences, number of healthcare visits, number of days of antibiotic use during the trial, and in follow-up. That is, apparently, according to this trial, you can supplement with probiotics and send your child to daycare and have fewer infections, measurably fewer infections, two-thirds drop in diarrhea and respiratory illnesses while you are supplementing the child.
You know, that's twice now there in this segment that you've rendered me speechless. You should be impressed.
Well, these are
things. At yourself.
Well, this is stuff that I would not have known. And this is really, you start to look at a new approach. I did see, and I didn't bring it in, but the sales of chemical supplements is starting to drop. You know, the vitamin C's, the magnesiums, the seleniums, and so forth, starting to drop off. And people are starting to pay attention to the germs that are present in their colon. And we certainly, at Health Matters, we've encouraged this trend with some of our guests and some of our shows. And I think, in this sense, we're starting to see something pretty powerful here. If you manipulate the germs that are present and you maintain a favorable group of germs in the colon of these kids, you may make them more resistant to infection. Now, this is a research trial. It's not ready. It's not been looked at from experts and commented on. There may be some harms that we're not aware of, the cost and so forth. But it does give you a bit of an exciting idea about how we might be able to keep our infants and our children more healthy in the future.
I do think it's interesting that 2014 may go down as the year of the bacteria.
Yep.
I mean, we have spent more time talking about bacteria than I can even remember on the radio show.
Right.
I mean, we clearly are starting to. But part of me wonders, Tony, and only time is going to tell, and only letting the research run its course and actually being able to evaluate it, you know, at the end of the run or near the end of the run. But we said the same thing about a couple of things. You know, there were trends of things that looked like they were going to be important. I remember back years ago where dental health, we were trying to say, okay, if you have something unhealthy going on in your mouth, gingivitis, tooth problems, something like that, we kept wanting to try to link that to long-term health problems. And, you know, I think we've kind of proven that that wasn't necessarily the case. So I really hope that this path we're starting to go down with the bacteria actually has a favorable outcome to the human race.
I hear you, Rick. I think it will. Now, if you think about that dental health, and that's a very good analogy, we know that poor dental health was linked to a number of diseases, everything from stroke and vascular problems to infections, possibly to some types of cancer. Then the next step, we tried to change dental health.
Correct.
To improve these conditions, and that didn't work. Think of it like vitamin D, low vitamin D levels associated with a large number of diseases. Supplementing vitamin D did not seem to have the impact we had hoped. Now, you look at this, they have already tried changing the environment by giving these young children lactobacillus, and it worked. Right. So we are already one stage ahead of where we were with the vitamin D supplements or with gum health. The observational studies are there. We know there is a link between bowel health and overall health, and now we are manipulating the environment and seeing good things happen. So you're right, only time will tell, but this is a step further than we were able to get with some of those other things that you mentioned. Next up, we move backwards a little bit to glucosamine. And this was a flop. I'll just put it that way. Glucosamine, first of all, is the second most commonly used non-vitamin, non-mineral, natural product used for arthritis. Global sales more than $2.1 billion in 2010. This was an article in the March 10th issue in Arthritis and Rheumatism, came out of the University of Arizona. They had 200 people with arthritis in one or both knees. And they had a pain score, and they had to score a certain level on the pain score. Two-thirds of them also had abnormal x-rays of their knees at the time the trial started. And they gave them 24 weeks of daily treatment with 1,500 milligrams of glucosamine in a bottle of diet lemonade. Every morning you get up, you drink your diet lemonade. Maybe it's got glucosamine. Half of them did, 200 people. Half of them didn't have anything other than just diet lemonade.
So I assume that this masked the taste to where you wouldn't know what you were getting?
Right. Glucosamine is a little bit sweet, but the diet lemonade apparently was enough that you couldn't tell. And so these people didn't know whether they were getting it or not. All they knew was they were drinking lemonade every day. 1,500 milligrams, that's a pretty standard dose of glucosamine. We usually do 500 milligrams three times a day. They did 1,500 milligrams all at once. 24 weeks of treatment. They got to, and this was a little bit unusual, they actually did MRI scans of the knees to look at the cartilage. MRI is an excellent way to look at the cartilage of the knees. They also looked for something called bone marrow lesions. We call those, the common term is bone bruises in the knees. They talked to them about their pain. They measured some markers in their urine of collagen breakdown. 24 weeks of treatment, no differences between the groups. No differences in the x-rays, no differences in the pain scores, no difference in the cartilage breakdown, no differences whatsoever. It was a negative study. Said the author, it is difficult to recommend glucosamine for patients with knee pain based on the results of our study. If a patient with knee pain asks whether it may be helpful, they're going to either have to take it more than 6 months. They took it again, 24 weeks, 6 months in the study, or they're going to have to take it at higher doses. Now, our Health Matters advice, if you are getting symptomatic relief from glucosamine, this does not mean that your results are invalid. This is great. It is a fairly safe product. By all means, if you're getting good results, continue. However, do not do it because it is in some way protecting your knees. You're not having any change in your pain scores. You're not getting around any better. And you say, I guess I got to take this glucosamine to keep my knees from deteriorating. No, it doesn't appear to do that. And a six-month trial of a pretty good dose of glucosamine, a pretty darn good study, did not have any effect. What's interesting, too, these guys were not actually in it to try to disprove glucosamine. Their initial thought was that they would see. They did everything they could to find some marker of cartilage that would turn positive. Again, with the urine test and everything else, they were looking in a variety of places for something that would prove that it was working, and they could not find anything there. So it doesn't stabilize your knees. It doesn't improve your knees. Glucosamine doesn't. It may make you feel better, which is perfectly acceptable. By all means, it's a safe product to take for that reason. But don't take it to make your knees stronger or to prevent deterioration.
Yeah, don't take it under false pretenses, right?
That's right. And so that's with all those things. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking a product that doesn't change the x-rays. Because I will tell you, you know, the other things we use, things like Tylenol, things like Aleve, none of those change the x-rays
either. Well, let's face it, Tony. We're talking to people who are listening to Health Matters.
Yeah.
They know this.
Yeah.
You listen to Health Matters, you're not going to get anything out of it.
Right? So if you listen to our show, why not do something else that's not going to have any objective? I see what you're saying. Thank you very much for that. But my point is,
I had to lead you to that
one. But arthritis, a lot of it is about symptoms. And if you find some way that you can relieve your symptoms, whether it's glucosamine, Tylenol, a liniment, a hot bath, paraffin treatments, whatever makes you feel better is perfectly fine. But don't do any of those things thinking that they will make your knees last longer.
Right.
Because they simply won't.
Well, that's just a downer.
Yeah. Well, I got more bad news. Let's just keep rolling through it.
This trudging one, on, literally.
This one came from the British Journal of Public Health. Is retirement good for your health?
No, you die during it.
Retirement leads to death. That's the Rick hypothesis. I understand what you're saying. But the question, you know, a lot of people do. They say, man, this job is wearing me out. It's putting me in the grave early. I should retire and I'll improve.
Now, let me tell you, it's been... This is not research-based. There's no facts you can go out and find, but there's a rumor that kind of runs around the military communities that when you get these long-term military guys that are just doing Army, Marine, you know, kind of day-to-day physical exercise, PT tests, more drill sergeant, more drill sergeant, and then all of a sudden they stop and go into retirement. There's a feeling that the minute they stop, they start a clock ticking that's like 10 years long, and then they die.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, there's no real evidence to support that. But, you know, I do know people that probably the thing is I probably would know the same people if they worked in a civilian job. Some people just aren't fortunate enough with the genetics to make them last forever.
Right. And let me just skip. I have a bunch of numbers, as I always do. But let me just skip to the chase on this. The problem right now with the research is they don't separate out people who retire because they are ready to enjoy life and people who are forced to retire due to illness, due to chronic diseases, due to, in some cases, fired.
Downsized,
or those things. And that makes a difference. That is, if you plan a retirement, one would think that you would be in better shape to enjoy that retirement and maintain your health than if you are forced by a bad back, a bad knee, a corporate policy, or a mandatory retirement age. That's a whole different ballgame. And the studies that have been done haven't separated them. It's a key problem right now with the science on retirement. But here's what they say. If you look at life expectancy, and this, again, it came from Great Britain, so this is European stuff. If you are age 65 and you retire, your life expectancy is close to 20 years.
Good.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
So does that mean you're going to wait to retire?
Well, as you know, here's the problem with it. Basically, in the next 40 years or so, we're going to go from 3 employed people for every retired person to a 1-to-1 ratio. That is, if we all live 20 years, if we all retire at age 65, there will only be 1 working person for every retired person, which is a big problem.
I hope mine is the CEO of Microsoft.
Right. Right now, I am picking my working person, and that person is going to be responsible for supporting me in my retirement. And I need to pick somebody wealthy, and I'm sorry to the rest of you, but I will do that. And this is European numbers, but the U.S., although we have more young people, we have more immigrants and higher birth rate than Europe does, we still are taking that same path. It makes you really rethink immigration when you realize we need young people to be able to run the economy.
Right. And this has everything to do with the baby boomer group is starting to retire, and that's just a very, very large group of Americans that will eventually... I mean, don't you think this is to some extent a little bit cyclic? I mean, this baby boomer problem is going to take care of itself in 30 years.
Yeah. Eventually, things will sort of level off.
If we make it that far.
Yeah. But first, we're going to pretty much tear up everything with our retirement before it happens. So we're just going to pretty much destroy all the institutions, Medicare, Social Security, all those things. And then the young people are just going to have to rebuild them after we're gone.
Right.
But that's their problem. I have some sympathy.
Well, for your granddaughter. Come on.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back to the study. They looked, first of all, at people who retired. They asked about their general health. They had 10 studies that they found that looked at the effect of retirement on the perception of general health. They had conflicting evidence. Basically, some indicated better general health after retirement, one worse general health, some no effect. And only one of these studies, again, distinguished between voluntary and involuntary retirement. So I don't know what it does for your general health. The information I have, I can't tell. Mental health, 12 studies looked at mental health, 6 were high quality, and these are things like well-being, distress, depression, antidepressant use, and pretty much the majority of these studies wound up showing that retirement is good for your mental health.
I mean, I would have to imagine it is. I'm kind of counting on that.
Yep.
I mean,
the difference is
case now. It's
either 14% worse to 11% better, but the majority of the studies showed an improvement in mental health.
So does that mean that your mental health can get better if you'll just renounce your retirement?
I think the thing is, yeah, it feels good to be walking away from this. And by the way, those numbers, I am incorrect. Actually, there is strong evidence mental health looked good. Now, physical health is another matter. That's where the studies range from negative 14% on physical health to a positive 11%. And this is physical functioning, physical fatigue, symptoms of an illness, disability, chronic illness, serious health problems, and it was uncertain. So your perceived general health, your physical health, no clear pattern, but bad data because they really didn't look at voluntary versus involuntary. It appears whether you are retiring because of some condition, whether you're retiring because you want to enjoy life, no matter what, your mental health improved with retirement, which is, that's a nice thing.
I'd be curious to know if there's a statistic out there that can kind of give you an idea of how many people on average, by percentages, 30, 60, 80% people actually retire as planned. How many people have to extend because of a market crash, or how many people are able to get out early because they plan very well? I'd be curious how many of them are health related.
Right.
I'd be very interested to know I'd like to know what my odds are that I'm actually going to retire when I think I'm going to retire.
Well, and the other thing is, I think you would qualify as a white-collar worker. That's another thing about this. They didn't really look at blue-collar versus white-collar. Some people retire because they reach a certain age.
I don't like collars at all.
And they have their – I know. Rick's a T-shirt guy, which I don't know what kind of collar that means. But the point is, some people save for their own retirement. Some people rely on Social Security, and they just retire as soon as Social Security benefits are available.
Right.
And with obviously varying degrees of success, and people have varying plans for their retirement. So I think it would be really tough. I will say the data that these people looked at, the British Journal of Public Health, and this was back actually last November, they could not tell. They simply could not tell anything except your mental health improves when you retire, and that in itself is a good thing. Speaking of good things.
And retiring.
Yeah, we're going to retire for a moment and allow you a chance again to load up on some more lactobacillus because goodness knows there's going to be some pretty serious stuff thrown at you in our next fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Boy, that was a short retirement. Hello, this is Health Matters, third fractional portion. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 7876 show. Our salute to those amazing young Wildcats, very far away from retirement at this point, we hope.
Actually, they may be closer to retirement than we are.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that true? I mean, if you gave me a contract and I got paid more than $1 million in a year, the next year I'm done. I'm thinking, well, I got to ruin my knees and I've got to do this for 20 years searching for a championship or whatever. You pay me that kind of money, I will show up. I'll sit on the bench. I'll go in if you want me to, maybe hit a shot or two, and then I will fade away very quickly and I will feel very good about myself.
But you know what, Tony? You live in the past. You talk in the past, because as much as it may sound weird, and people may not really want to agree, but if you stop and actually do the math, if I was 22 years old and you gave me $1 million, I would have a hard time living the rest of my life on $1 million. A regular blue-collar worker earns $2 to $3 million in their life.
All right, I'm a third of the way through in 1 year.
No.
At the very least, I could take a couple of years off. You see what I'm saying?
I'm saying, why not go for the $5 million contract, then retire? Because you could do it with five.
I think we could all do it with five. I mean, my goodness, that's even better than
winning
the lottery.
Well, you could do it with three, but I'm just saying, you'd be surprised that at age 21 or 22, if you had, say, $2 million, living till your death at age 90 could be very difficult.
Right, but if I don't have to live next to LeBron, I don't have to have a chauffeur, I don't have to have a chef and a financial planner, all I got to do is keep it together for 1 year and not spend money, and then I'm good.
Are you?
I think so.
Well, the problem is of that million, you're only going to get about $600,000. The rest of it's going to go to taxes, right?
That still sounds really good to me.
So then now, how are you going to $600,000 for the rest of your life?
No, but it's 1 year, and I think at that point, I might be willing to take a little time off.
But you said retire. Retire means done. Kaput.
Yeah, well, I may come out of retirement when I run out of money, but I'm willing to take a shot at that. I mean,
at age 26, you're back working.
Let me live the dream here. I could invest it in something or other. I could take a shot at it.
I felt the need to bust your bubble.
Today's sponsor, the 13th annual Oh Baby, It's a Baby Shower. This comes from the Northeast AHEC, the University of Kentucky Obstetrics and Gynecology Service in Moorhead and St. Clair Regional Medical Center, April 5th, 2014, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., Moorhead Conference Center. You've got to be there. If you are planning a baby, if you're pregnant, if you're new or adopting parents or grandparents, a community baby shower, free giveaways, lots of very valuable stuff, boosts on breastfeeding, dental care, infant care, immunizations, financial information, safety issues. My goodness, they will show you how to assemble the various pieces of equipment that you have bought or are going to buy for the baby, how to get the car seat set up, all those sort of things. There is a special booth for new fathers, and it is reasonably interesting to new fathers. There will be giveaways. There will be a lot of things. This would be a great thing to do from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. April 5th, Moorhead Conference Center, the 13th annual Oh Baby, It's a Baby Shower. Want to talk a little bit about Affordable Care Act in this fractional portion, and these are the preventive services. One of the interesting aspects of the Affordable Care Act is they provide full coverage, no deductibles, no copays, no cost sharing of any sort for preventative health services. And this would be things like screening for abdominal aortic aneurysms. This is a one-time screen for men 65 to 75 who have smoked, screening for alcohol use, blood pressure screenings, cholesterol screenings. A big one, colorectal cancer screening. We'll talk about that. Adults ages 50 to 75, free colorectal cancer screening provided by your healthcare plan. Now, these are the ones that were not grandfathered in, the ones where they didn't say you can keep your last year's health plans. These are the new Affordable Care Act health plans. We'll pay completely, no cost sharing, for colorectal cancer screening. Depression screening, anything the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force gives a top ranking to, they will provide for free. You get your HIV testing. Everyone ages 15 to 65. I'm sure you've had yours, Rick, but they will pay for it. Vaccinations, a hepatitis vaccination, shingles vaccine, if appropriate, the HPV vaccine, flu shots, measles, mumps, rubella, meningococcal, pneumococcal, tetanus, and the varicella, depending on your eligibility for that. Obesity screening, they will pay for that. Sexually transmitted infection
is
prevention.
Is obesity screening getting on a scale?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, again, these are not big ticket. Colon cancer and the vaccines, though, some of those vaccines are pretty expensive. And tobacco use screening. For women, screening for iron deficiency anemia during pregnancy, alcohol counseling during pregnancy, also covered. Genetic counseling for those who are having the BRCA gene testing, if someone in your family has breast cancer or ovarian cancer. Mammograms, every 1 to 2 years, women over age 40. Breast cancer chemo prevention. There are some medications if you are high risk you can use to lower your risk. Cervical cancer screening for sexually active women. Contraception, and of course that is right now a hot button item in front of the Supreme Court at the time we are recording this show. Folic acid supplements if you are thinking about becoming pregnant. Diabetes screening, hepatitis B screening, HPV test every 3 years, and osteoporosis screening. All those are covered completely under the new insurance policies written under the Affordable Care Act. Children, autism screening, blood pressure screening, depression screening, fluoride chemo prevention, hearing loss screening, height, weight, body mass index, checking for sickle cell and other hemoglobinopathies. Of course, the childhood vaccinations all covered completely under the Affordable Care Act. Obesity screening and counseling, again, Rick points out, that's just checking your weight and height. Yes, it is, but still covered. And vision screening for all children is covered as well. So the Affordable Care Act, one of the nice things they did is they said, look, if you want to try to protect your health, if the screening is recommended, if it is a standard screening, we will pay for it completely, no deductibles and no cost sharing from the people that have these Affordable Care Act policies. So kind of keep that in mind. This may come up and may be important for you later on.
If you say so.
Okay.
I kind of hope not, but maybe.
All right.
I mean, I have my own scale, though, so I might need, maybe they'll give me a discount.
Yeah, you can go in and demand to be paid
or
for
self-screening. What if I walked in and just said, hey, I know I'm obese?
Yeah. Well, honestly, the walking in part, you know, if you did stuff, I'm coming in to have my cholesterol, blood pressure checked, talk to me about my weight, things like that. That would be, if I, as your physician, if I code that, if I circle the box that says this is a preventative service, we are just talking about these things, then that should be covered first dollar from your health insurance plan if it's a new plan under the Affordable Care Act.
Cool.
So just remember that. And I think what we're hoping then is that this will push up our rates of screening for certain diseases and should then lower the chances that this thing will be found late and affect your health. Now, and here's an example of how screening works. Back in the late 1940s, colorectal cancer was the most common cause of cancer death in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah, more common than lung cancer back in the 40s. This was before we had automatic cigarette machines and people were smoking packs of cigarettes when people rolled their own. And, of course, there are a lot of people who misunderstand this and they say, well, back then they didn't have all the additives and things. No, we just didn't use as much tobacco back in those days. But colorectal cancer in the 40s was the most common cause of cancer death. It has now dropped to third after lung cancer and prostate cancer in men, lung cancer and breast cancer in women. It is third in each sex. Statistics up to 2010 show that the incidence and the mortality rates continue to fall. That is, we're seeing less colorectal cancer, less people are dying. The deaths have been falling at 3% per year over the last 10 years, giving us a 30% drop in our rates of dying from colorectal cancer.
Can we sustain that rate? I mean, 3% per year? I mean, seems like at some point, obviously the math doesn't work out after a certain point, but
right.
It just seems like when does that start diminishing?
Well, I think...
because we've been making pretty good strides at it.
Right. I think the thing is, when you do colonoscopy, one, you obviously find cancers, but you also find polyps that will turn into cancers. So this is one of the two screening tests we have that actually prevents the cancer from forming in the first place.
Right.
When you think about screening, you usually think, well, we'll find it
detection,
at an early stage.
Yeah, right, yeah. Detection.
But this actually, by removing the polyps that turn into cancer, can prevent it. So the incidence of cancer, the actual finding of cancer, has been falling also at 3.4% per year, and we think that is due to colonoscopy. Death rates falling about 3% per year as well. Now, it is dropping in people over age 50 because that's where we are recommending routine screening with colonoscopy. Unfortunately, it's kind of going up a little bit in younger adults.
Well,
under age 50.
And that because we're not recommending it there, right? It's not part of a recommended screening.
Right. Now, it is, their rates are lower, but they are going up. A couple of reasons they're going up: our diets are not very good. Also, obesity has been linked to higher rates of colon cancer. So probably that's our problem. As a matter of fact, the rate in, again, people over age 65 in our senior citizens has actually accelerated. Incidence is dropping 7% per year between 2008 and 2010. Now, that's, you know, not sustainable. Eventually, we will cover all of our senior citizens or a majority of them, and it'll start to taper off. But it is dramatic how successful we have been. Unfortunately, still 23 million Americans who should be screened have not been tested. We really need to be doing testing, screening for colon cancer. Health Matters feels the best screen is a colonoscopy.
Right.
But the results are remarkable. This really caught us off guard, to be honest, how fast the rates were dropping. And again, to see the incidence, actually the rate of finding cancers is dropping. So sure, we can treat them. That's nice that we can treat them. But we also, apparently, we can prevent them, which is kind of cool.
But don't you think we've been trying to do a very good job as a whole in trying to broadcast out the significance of a colonoscopy? I mean, and I think, you know, we have been pushing at age 50, colonoscopy, you know, the big 5-0, that's the time. And then, of course, if you have a genetic disposition to it, then you want to start.
Right, 10 years younger, if you have a relative that had it at a young age, start 10 years younger than
right.
they had it.
Right, start at 40. And, you know, and we've just been hounded on that over the years, even, you know, here at Health Matters and all the medical literature. And so it's clear that that's having an impact. Now, at what point will we get the numbers diminishing enough to where then they start looking and go, okay, well, maybe that 40 to 50 range is appropriate for the preventative side of things and not just the detection and removal. And it, you have to keep wondering, okay, well, when does that leak into 35 or 32 or 30? Or because, again, if we see those numbers are increasing by whatever means, diet, lack of exercise, lack of personal care, doesn't change the fact that the numbers are still going up, and we're going to try to figure out
right.
how to stop them.
Now, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the problem with that is if it goes from 1 in a million to 2 in a million, it's doubled, but you can't screen a million people to catch two cases. So, you know,
the people who sell the screening equipment would like you to.
Yeah, but the absolute numbers are still lower in those under 50s. But you do have a point. I mean, if the test becomes economical, if the test becomes safe, convenient, then obviously we can extend it further down and save additional lives. It is remarkable. You know, and we've seen this with prostate cancer. We've reevaluated the PSA test for prostate cancer. We found a lot of stuff that's not going to kill people. We did a lot of surgeries. Right now, routinely for average risk people, it is not recommended. There are, still are some people at higher risk that should be screened with a PSA. Talk to your doctor about that. You know, we've had some difficulty with mammograms as well.
Right.
Some studies have indicated perhaps they are not as beneficial as thought. There was a big fight to try to get mammography in the 40s. Even in the U.S., we did not feel we had strong evidence. The problem is a lot of breast cancers we see in the 40s are very fast growing. They will appear and grow and get away from us in between mammogram screenings. And so the screening was not as effective for young people. The other thing was there were a lot of not cancers that were being biopsied and looked at and operated on. And so we were causing harm with doing mammography in young people. That could happen if you extended colon screening down low enough, but that remains to be seen. But with prostate cancer screening having some issues, with even with mammograms for breast cancer having some issues. Now, again, at Health Matters, we are not advocating people back off from mammography screening just yet, but you have to know that the benefits of screening are not as clear-cut as we initially thought. But here is a situation where we're actually changing the nature of colon cancer. So when I look at this, I think, first of all, pap smears and screening for cervical cancer has done wonders in terms of saving lives, preventing a really devastating illness in young women. And cervical cancer does affect young women. And we're seeing the same thing for colorectal cancer screening. This is one area where we can be very, very solidly enthusiastic, and we have good solid evidence that it does work.
Well, Tony, we've done such a, you know, what I would say is a remarkable job of this, taking the screening portion and saving lives. At what point, for instance, you know, we're doing a much better job now of detecting lung cancers, and we're actually able to decrease the mortality rate of people with lung cancer. Now, granted, it's not as dominant, but when do you see the colorectal, not necessarily prevention or detection, but actually figuring out why it happens in the first place? When are we going to get at that? I mean, I know it's hypothetical, and I know it's pie in the sky, but that's kind of what we do.
Well, I will say, if you look at, we finally figured out that there was a virus that caused cervical cancer, the human papillomavirus.
Right.
And this virus was very, very infectious. It was spread easily. Smokers have more trouble clearing it. And if you can't clear this virus, then you are at higher rates of changes in the cervix and winding up in cervical cancer. But for that one case where we finally sort of figured out what was going on, you know that there are a lot of types of cancer we still have no idea whatsoever.
No, and I know, and it really, you know, it was certainly a tough question, but I do think that, I mean, we have kind of put all our energy towards screening and prevention because the term we use a lot is that's the low-hanging fruit. That's the place where we can make the most significant change quickest. 3% a year for 10 years is a 30% reduction, and at some point, those numbers are going to slow down, and at that point, you have to start getting more towards a root cause as opposed to how to deal with it once we've got it.
Once again, I think we're going to start looking more at the bacteria in the colon. I think we do know that obesity increases rates, and so if we can protect our general health, that should be beneficial as well.
Man, how we can make a show go.
That's right. Remember the baby shower, and remember Rick, who's going to get us off the air.
Special thanks, and pay special attention to these special thanks. Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producers, Asa Hasoda and Spencer Johnson, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or visit us on Facebook. Just look for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember,
Health Matters is a prescription radio show used for the treatment of male pattern hair loss.
9 out of 10 men improved or maintained hair with Health Matters based on photographic assessment by an expert panel of dermatologists. Most men saw results 3 to 12 months after starting Health Matters. If Health Matters has not worked for you in 12 months, further radio shows are unlikely to be a benefit.
Typical of our show. Health Matters is for use by men only and should not be used by women or children.
Dear God, no.
It is not known if Health Matters works for a receding hairline.
Women who are or may be pregnant must not listen to Health Matters and should not handle crushed or broken radios because the active ingredient may cause abnormalities of a male baby's sex organs.
Whew.
True.
If a woman who is pregnant hears the active ingredient in Health Matters, which would be Dr. Tony Weaver, a doctor should be consulted.
Immediately.
Health Matters shows are coded and will prevent, coated with a lot, and will prevent contact with the active ingredient during normal listening, provided that your radio is not broken or crushed.
Please don't break or crush your radio.
What is it with crushed radios in us?
In clinical studies for Health Matters, a small number of men experience certain sexual side effects, such as less desire for sex or difficulty in achieving an erection. Each of these side effects occurred in less than 2% of men and went away in men who stopped listening to Health Matters.
I'm so glad you read that paragraph. Tell your doctor about any change in your breasts, such as lumps, pain, or discharge, depression, decrease in sex drive that continued after the show was over, and in rare cases, male breast cancer.
There may
be an increased risk of a more serious form of prostate cancer in men listening to 5 times the weekly dose of Health Matters. Get off that website.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.